This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. Testimony today on Tuesday in the Alex Murdaugh trial, the corrupt attorney who was previously associated with the law company PMPED, the law firm's former chief financial officer, on the stand today, revealing how the disgraced attorney exploited his clients for financial benefit. Jeannie Steckinger is quoted as saying he did it through the art of bullshit, in reference to how it is believed that Murdaugh was able to steal millions of dollars from the PMPED law company where he was once employed. Let's take a listen to the courtroom.
Attorneys are out of the building, traveling in hard, and it would kind of go up the rank from there.
Okay. Was Alec very involved in the actual management of the firm?
No.
Were other partners more involved in the management of the firm?
Yes.
Tell me, what was your observation of Alec as a lawyer in the office? What was your observations and characterization?
Alec kept different hours than a lot of the rest of us. He came in and he would work late, always loud, always busy, always in a rush. He had the gift of gab, but he always seemed last minute and hurried and frenetic.
Okay. Always last minute and frenetic?
Yes.
What about his cell phone use? How was he with a cell phone?
Constantly on the phone.
Constantly on the phone. What were your observations of him as a lawyer?
I think Alec was successful more off, not from his work ethic, but from his ability to establish relationships and to manipulate people into settlements and clients into liking him. So he did it through the art of bullshit, basically.
That can be an art.
Mm-hmm.
Did he, in your estimation, in your judgment, was he more of a technical type lawyer, or was he one that really understood how to use the emotion of a case?
He would use the emotion of a case and the emotion of his clients.
Did he understand the emotional value that the sympathies of a case could have?
I would.
He's asked her to testify as what he understands, what's in his mind. I object.
I sustain the objection.
With Alex, your observations of Alec as a lawyer, what skills did you see and how he was able to value a case?
I would think that he was able to read the client. And it seemed to, he always got higher settlements than it looks like they should appear, going back when we reviewed everything. So I think that he used his personality more than technical skill. I think that you know, we look back and we see things that were manipulated and set up, and I believe he did that a lot with his clients as well.
You mentioned, did Alec get good results? Did the defendant get good results?
It appeared that they usually did, yes.
Were they very lucrative results?
Yes.
Did you have any observations in working with Alec for 20 some odd years about his memory?
I think that looking back, where I thought he was chaotic and didn't remember things or kind of got bored with details sometimes and wouldn't finish things off, I really think looking back, as we've gone back and pieced together a lot of this, that we saw where he would tell people one thing and another person another. So in my opinion, looking back, I think he had almost a photographic memory, you know, to keep all the balls in the air that we now saw were in the air. It appears that he would have to have a really strong memory.
Stand by for me real quick. You had mentioned before that for the firm to operate at the beginning of the year after it cleared its books, that it would loan from or take loans from partners at their option in order to sort of give some seed money until fees started to roll in. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. I'm going to show you what's been marked as Exhibit 428 to your testimony and just have you take a look at that and ask if you recognize those documents as it relates to a particular instance involving the defendant.
I do.
All right. And tell me about this instance. What happened here, please?
Okay, so this is in 2017. A check for the payment got mistakenly written to R. Alexander Murdoch instead of his brother, Randolph Murdoch. So the loan payoff was written to Alec.
All right, let me slow you down. So does his brother work for the law firm?
His brother does work for the law firm.
And what name does he go by?
He goes by Randy Murdoch. His legal name is Randolph Murdoch IV.
Had Randy Murdoch loaned money to the law firm?
He did.
Had Alec Murdoch loaned all?
No.
All right, and so what happened then?
So, as we said, we had the clerical error. And a few days later, Alec came to our staff, and it's not quite clear which staff because our records don't show that, but a voided check, he acted as if he'd lost this original check and had another check written. So a replacement check was then written to Alec again, which was a mistake again.
Did that second check get cashed?
The second check got cashed pretty much immediately within a week or two. And then about a year later, the first check got cashed as well. And that's when I caught in the system that he had cashed both checks. And looking back, I realized that the mistake had been made, that somebody had hit, their names are right beside each other in the vendor list, and that they had made a clerical mistake, and that he was paid money that he was not owed.
All right. Ultimately, did he get that money twice that he was not supposed to have received?
He did.
And ultimately, was it because he claimed that he had lost the first check?
Correct.
Ultimately, did he cash both checks?
He did.
And cash the original one a year later, is that
correct?
All right. Was he confronted about this back at that time when it was detected, I guess, in 2017? Is that right?
He was.
And he was confronted at that time?
He was. I don't remember that he was confronted by me. I know that Danny Henderson spoke with him about it, and Alec just claimed that he made a mistake and thought that he had paid the money, that he had loaned the money that year, and Danny chose to kind of let it go and sweep it under the rug.
Did he pay it back at that point?
He did pay it back.
All right, so that happened, and the explanation was given, and then he was allowed to pay it back. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And everybody moved on, right?
That's correct. I have to point out that it was, these attorneys worked as a brotherhood and were very family, and they trusted him and accepted the explanation.
What was that word you just used? You said it was a brotherhood?
Yes.
And so when the attorneys are dealing with one another, when the attorneys are dealing with you, how are y'all dealing with one another? What's the basis of that?
Trust.
Trust?
Trust.
And so over the years, when Alec Murdoch would tell you to do a transaction or anything like that, what were you relying on?
His word and trust.
Are you generally familiar with what's been known as the boat case?
Yes.
Right. And do you remember that occurring around in February 2019?
I do.
And again, without going into the specifics of the boat case, what was your general understanding of the boat case? Well, let me ask you this. Was his son Paul charged with driving the boat in the boat case, to your knowledge?
Yes.
And was Alec Murdoch sued civilly in the boat case because of the death of Mallory Beach?
Yes.
After the boat case, did you notice any changes in Alec's behavior or his demeanor around the office?
I can't say that I really did up until November, December of late 20.
Okay, and what did you notice then?
Didn't really notice it then. We can go back and notice it now. That's when he started making some disbursements that he was stealing from that started getting sloppy. So the things that I noticed are more in hindsight.
And I'll put this exhibit up on the screen. Let me get ahead of myself. This is exhibit 428, which I'd offer in evidence.
Objection, Joe.
All right.
Admitted without objection.
428, this is a, this is the loan check you were talking about, is that right?
That's right.
This is where Alec erroneously received a check meant for his brother Randy.
That's right.
And then ultimately managed to get the same amount twice, is that correct?
That's right.
All right, and how much was that check for? I can bring it to you if you need to see it.
Yeah, you're gonna have to.
Yeah, I'll bring it to you. Screen over here is bigger than that.
It was for $121,358.63.
$121,000, correct?
That's correct.
When you received the check, did Alex say, no, this isn't mine. This isn't my $121,000 check?
No, he didn't.
All right. Now, you mentioned, you started to talk about some things you noticed in late of 2020, and let's just set the table a little bit more before we do that. You mentioned disbursements. Tell the jury, before we see some paperwork, tell the jury how disbursements go about. Is there certain paperwork that's done, and how do the lawyers interface with the finance stuff for that to be accomplished?
Okay, so a disbursement after a case is won, or what we call settled, the money comes into the client trust, just like I talked about. A disbursement will recap how much money was won, how much attorney fees, how much expenses were withheld or earned for our firm in that, and then it will list any loans or liens that need to be paid off. And what I mean by that is like medical liens, medical bills, insurance companies getting their money back for items that they paid, and then it will show the balance that goes to the client.
And so then how do they interface with the finance staff? What does the finance staff do as opposed to when the attorneys prepare those disbursement forms?
It comes over to our finance department. We have the supporting documentation with it, and we will process the checks based off the attorney's signature. Those then go back to the attorneys that handled the case or the paralegals that handled the case. They meet with the client and explain the disbursement to them and give them the funds.
Is the finance staff relying on what the lawyers are sending them to determine what checks should be cut?
Yes. All right. With support.
With support?
Yes.
Ultimately, are they trusting the attorneys to provide them the correct information?
We are.
All right, so you mentioned that something that happened in late 2020 that was the first things that you started to notice in the wake of the Bowdoin case that was a little different. And tell the jury what you were about to talk about.
As I said, in late 2020, I really didn't notice it at that point. But some of these items that we're going to discuss started happening at that point. My discovery of things started coming to a head in May of 21.
May of 2021.
Yes.
All right. And tell me what was the first thing that came to your attention?
Because the one thing that came to attention was a disbursement that the fees were made out and processed to Forge Consulting. And what that meant is that the fees weren't going into our personal account like they should. They weren't going to the firm. Forge Consulting is a true company that you can do structures of attorney fees, but the way that this was done was not correct. To do a correct structure,
let me slow you down so we can unpack this a little bit. All right, let's first talk about what is a structure. What is a structure? What does that mean?
So a structure means that you can set up a fee in the agreement with the insurance company that you can put that money into an annuity that you'll get it out later. You can avoid taxes now and take them out when you're 65 or whatever year you determine. So it's a way that they can defer income for retirement. If they're having a good year, they can do that.
So maybe an explanation would be kind of like the lottery. You can either get your settlement in one lump sum or you can get it paid over time, correct?
Correct.
All right, and so this is what a structure is getting it paid over time.
Correct.
And are there tax benefits associated with doing a structure?
They would avoid taxes at the year that they made the fee, and they would pay the taxes when they got it out, similar to your retirement 401k.
And is it sometimes common for plaintiffs' lawyers, lawyers who get recoveries for clients, to have their clients get the settlement in a structure as opposed to getting it in all one lump sum so that there's some security over time with that money?
It is definitely a vehicle that can be used by plaintiffs' lawyers. We don't do it very often within our firm, and when it is done, it has to be, every partner needs to know about it and needs to be agreed upon, because obviously that money's not coming into the firm to help with overhead and expenses. So we have to agree on it, and we have to account for it in our allocations at the end of the year to determine bonuses that we're going to pay out.
Sure, but I'm talking about with clients right now. So clients that receive a settlement, they can elect to either get it in one lump sum, or they can get a structured annuity over time where they get it however much a year for the however many years it goes, correct?
Yes, that's true too.
All right. Kind of like the lottery. You can get the whole big thing but with taxes, or you can get a bigger sum over time, correct?
That's correct.
And so some clients might choose to get it over time so that their money is more secure over a longer time, correct?
Correct. And you generally see that when it's a minor involved or somebody with special needs that has a disability of some sort.
And so what is Forge Consulting, the legitimate business Forge Consulting, what do?
They set up structured annuities for clients like we're talking about. They do special needs trusts for people who are injured or are going to need life care plans, and they handle that kind of. They have a few other things that they do, but I'm not familiar as much with those services.
Have they provided services over the years? The legitimate company, Forge Consulting, legitimate services to the law firm and its clients over the years, and helping them set up structured settlements.
I do. We've used them 250 to 300 times.
And is there who's kind of like the main guy at Forge Consulting, the legitimate business?
Michael Gunn.
All right. Now, you mentioned that we're not talking now about the client structuring their settlements, but what if a lawyer wins a big case and wants to, so he's going to get a huge fee. Let me ask you this first. Generally, what is the legal fees for the firm when they win a case, whether by settlement or by trial?
Generally, they're 33% to 40%, and it depends on what stage the case was in or the work we had to do. So if we settle a case before we have to start doing summons and complaints and depositions or going to trial, we take 33 1/3%. If it goes further, we do 40%, and it can go to 45% if it's on an appeal. But generally speaking, it's between 1/3 and 40%.
So let's say that somebody's a partner, and let's say they win a case of $10 million, and it was a 40% one, so they're going to get a $4 million fee, correct?
Correct.
All right. Let's say that they decided that instead of taking that fee, that $4 million fee, they want to structure that fee just like a client would. Can they do that?
They can do that, and that's what I was referring to before. With the authorization of the other partners, and making sure that we have enough money to operate and enough money to account for it. If they do that, it's supposed to be done in the release, and the insurance company will send the money directly to Forge Consulting and not through us.
Okay. Because it can't go through y'all directly, or it doesn't work.
Or correct? He would not get the tax benefit of it.
And if an attorney still had to do that, they're going to have to work everything out with y'all to make sure everything's accounted for the end of the year bonuses and everything else.
That's correct.
Is that a common thing that people in the firm were doing?
No.
All right. So, kind of setting all that up, what came to your attention as it related to the defendant, Alec Murdoch?
So in May 17, there was a disbursement called Hirschberger that the fees were said, I'd have to look at the exact disbursement, but it said structured fees forged, and it had an amount.
Let me get some marked real quick.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to show you what's been marked as Exhibit 429 to your testimony, and have you just flip through that real quick and tell me generally what that is.
Okay, this is the disbursements to do with the money recovered in the Hirschberger case. and this one had multiple disbursements.
All right, but let's just talk about the one you were just referring to.
Okay.
I'll show it to you.
This page.
On the third page of this exhibit, is that right?
That's right.
All right, pick up your story. What did you notice that came to your attention?
So it says PMPD attorney fee, and in parentheses, it had Forge. The check had been made out payable to Forge, and I knew this was incorrect, so I went and had a discussion with Alec about this. And the basics of the discussion was we needed to know about if they were going to do a structured annuity, we needed to do it. Also told him that the way he had done it was incorrect, that he would not be saving any tax consequences, that he needed to properly set it up with the insurance company on the front side.
Right. And why wasn't it done right? Why were you telling, at least from what you knew at the time, why did you think it was not being done right?
Basically because it should have gone from the insurance company directly to Forge. We would not write a check and send it to Forge for a structured fee.
That's the latest that we have for you. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of the breaking coverage, testimony, and full court audio at the end of the day. We post it here for you every day. Until next time, for all of us, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.